if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm the father of interdimensional travel.
And thank you for joining us again to discuss two more episodes of Sliders this week. We're discussing Invasion and Post-Traumatic Slide Disorder. Beginning with the first episode this week, Invasion, written by the man, Tracy Torme, directed by Richard Compton. This originally aired June 28th, 1996.
Who brought the Manta to its knees?
I guess I did.
The Cro-Mags aren't going to like that. They're not going to like that one bit. They will avenge this loss with merciless ferocity.
Cro-Mags, who the devil are the Cro-Mags?
They're marauders. Killers. And they eat eyes. Human eyes. They came here to vanquish us, riding a wave of manta ships to our world. And so, our Earth dies screaming.
I thought you said they didn't come from space.
No. They're from right here, man. They're from right here. That's the irony, don't you see? I daren't say any more. They might be watching. They might well be watching. Ah! My lovely twin daughters have arrived. They too were set free when the Cro-Mags came to our city. Come along now, girls. We mustn't be here when the vengeful masters arrive. Good day to you. May your punishment be relatively painless.
We start in the middle of a slide through the vortex, arriving in a very quiet San Francisco, seemingly devoid of life, with graffiti all around them warning of the coming of the Cro-Mags. The timer is acting strangely as the sliders make their way through the destroyed surroundings, trying to locate the source of the timer's strange behavior, when what appears to be a spaceship appears and makes their way towards them. Quinn activates the timer, which causes the ship to malfunction and crash. An exposition extra wearing a medical bracelet from a mental institution appears to ask who destroyed this ship and to explain who the Cro-Mags are, where they come from, what they are here for, and what they like to eat. Quinn and Arturo leap at the chance to explore the insides of the crashed ship, excited by the discovery that the ship was created from organic metal, in short, making it a living ship. As the two explore inside, time seems to pass slowly compared to outside the ship, where it grows dark on Wade and Remy. They discover a dead pilot, which causes Quinn distress, which is quickly broken up by a loud alarm, set off when the professor removes a wrist device from the deceased figure. They flee the ship, and our sliders hide from further Cro-Mags showing up to investigate the alarm. Before they slide into the next dimension, a world where the French rule America, they look up and realize that the Cro-Mags are actual sliders, able to create huge spaceship-sized vortexes. Our sliders discuss the possible alt-history that led to the Cro-Mags as a dominant species, but the sliders' respite is brief as the Cro-Mags appear once again, tracking the group through the wrist device that Arturo took from the downed ship. The Cro-Mags fire upon the sliders, stunning them and taking them aboard their ship, where they are held captive. The Sliders meet Mary, a human raised by the Cro-Mags to be their interpreter, who tells them they are being transported to another dimension, indicating that the Cro-Mags can control their slides. At the outpost Earth 113, the Sliders are in turn subjected to interrogation, which in some cases takes the form of impersonating loved family members, friends, torture, and even outright threats. Quinn is given special treatment by Mary, hoping it will lead him to reveal his home coordinates. Mary is apparently taken with Quinn, feeling a newfound resistance in herself when she witnessed Quinn's defiance. She slips Quinn a key card as she reveals that in the morning, they will be moved to the Cro-Mag homeworld for more intense torture, eventually leading to death. They escape, narrowly evading the Cro-Mags, with an injured Mary showing up to give them their timer and to also open a vortex using the Cro-Mag sliding technology so that the Sliders can return to the previous dimension. The Sliders slide with Mary left behind to die. As the Sliders celebrate their return to New France, we cut back to the Cro-Mag outpost to hear an exposition extra, Cro-Mag edition, explain that they've determined the Sliders do not know their home coordinates, but they have implanted a tracking device in one of the four, and they will be watching and waiting for when they finally return home.
Are the four being the advanced scouts of a sliding army?
No! That's ridiculous!
Do the rulers of your world have plans to invade the Cro-Mag dynasty?
Of course not! They don't even know about you!
What are the dialectic interdimensional coordinates of your home Earth?
I told you, again and again, I don't know!
If you did know, would you tell us?
No.
Why?
Because I don't trust you. I don't believe the things you tell me. I don't believe anything you say.
If it meant sparing your life, would you tell us what we want to know?
No. Never.
What if Queen Mallory's life were at stake? Would that make a difference to you? We have him in the next chamber. Unless your answers begin to bear fruit, we will put him to death. Painfully.
Alright, so that was quite an in-depth synopsis this week.
Yes, it was. I like this episode, and I got a little into it, I gotta say.
All right, well, let's get into a bit of trivia.
All right, so basically, and they had a lot more with that exposition extra, the mental guy. They had a lot more lines, but it was like nothing significant, just little extra bits and pieces here and there talking about the Cro-Mags and how he appeared in the scene. Just nothing major. There was originally a really cool scene with Wade and Remy. You know, they're outside the ship waiting for the guys inside. And while they're outside, they start to hear noises and they go to investigate and they see people looting in one of the stores. But it turns out not to be people. It turns out to be Cro-Mags that are in the store, you know, doing something in there. And then they chase Wade and Remy back to the ship, and that's when they meet up with the guys, as we see in the actual episode. In the original version, which I like this a lot better because it makes Remy less of an idiot, Remy wasn't supposed to lose his wallet like he did in the show. The original idea was that their money was just useless in New France because they had U.S. money, United States of America money, which makes total sense, you know? I didn't like how they made him, I lost it, guys. I'm sorry, you know? It's like, you know, like, he didn't have to do that. This was a much better way to do it.
He did actually give, like, a busker some money while he was away, so.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's just, I like this one much better. Arturo had a very biting line. It was just like one line, and it's when Quinn tells him that he shouldn't have taken the device off of the alien, that he had no right. Arturo says something like, well, that's a very foolish attitude and shows me that you are still technically my student, you know, and then it goes on as the episode was in the final version. But it was a real, like, put down, you know, like, you know, don't tell me what to do. I'm the teacher and you're my student. I was like, wow, that's kind of harsh. And then there was this would have been neat to see, but they just cut it because of time. And, you know, Mary talked about it, but we're supposed to be able to see a flashback of when Mary was taken by the Cro-Mags. And it was going to be a two-part flashback. In the beginning, she was going to describe to, you know, Quinn the Sliders, how she was taken by the Cro-Mags and how her world welcomed the Cro-Mags. And we would have seen a flashback with people applauding and welcoming the Cro-Mags in and everyone just being happy about it. And then later on, you know, after Mary starts to have second thoughts, we would see the flashback again. But this time we would see the reality of it, of people freaking out and screaming and crying and trying to get away and being very upset. So it would have been a neat scene to see there, the both sides of it.
Yeah, I think it's better the way that they've actually done it is to keep it ambiguous to whether or not
right.
they do come in peace or in fact invade.
I just thought, like, in my mind I was like picturing the two different versions, like, oh yeah, that's cool, because, but you know, like, they have done that before in different movies and, you know, TV shows, and so maybe it'd be like a bit old and tried at this point. I don't know.
Their sliding patterns were erratic and totally random.
The successful implantation of a homing device in one of the subjects will allow us to track their journeys in hopes that they will eventually return to their Earth. And we will be waiting and watching, ready to attack when the time is right. You have done well, Mary. You may have an hour of freedom in the garden before go back to your cage.
Thank you, Master.
All right, well, getting into our discussion of this episode. It kicks off, and we have something that we actually talked about a couple of episodes ago, is them sliding in and Remy with his sliding pads for the Sirius mm-hmm. slider.
That's right.
And we were actually talking about just last episode how Derek Bond had like a vision of where they were going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it makes you think, okay, so they're going to meet the Cro-Mags. But if Remy had the sliding pads on, it meant that they went somewhere else before they showed up on this.
Oh, look at you.
Cro-Mag robot. So even in continuity, it
right.
kind of still feels a little off.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's true. Wow. Okay. Well, maybe he was like seeing ahead another world, maybe. Maybe his reception wasn't quite right, you know?
Going to like see that. Them soon.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good catch, though. I never thought about that.
Yeah,
nice.
I was keeping that in mind because we were just talking about it last week. But
right,
then we,
right.
Yeah, and we'd already talked about the patented sliding pads.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, it all exactly. sort of just popped with me. I was like, oh. So they are in a world where the Cro-Mags have taken over. And of course, they don't know what Cro-Mags are. We're just right. seeing the graffiti everywhere. Cro-Mags rule.
The first thing I thought, you know, and it's kind of related, is Cro-Magnon, you know,
yes.
from the early human history, you know? That's what I was thinking at first. So, like, when I saw the actual Cro-Mags later, I was like, well, that doesn't look like Cro-Magnons at all. You know, they look quite different.
Well, you know, at the same time, humans don't overly resemble their earlier selves. I should say mm-hmm. our earlier selves were all humans here.
Right.
We've taken a bit of an evolutionary leap.
Right. Well, yeah.
And it does seem that, you know, once we start getting into the Cro-Mags, is that they've actually evolved quite a fair bit to the point where they have telepathic abilities and they use that
yeah.
to their advantage.
Yeah, that's something that I have this farther down the list, but I was wondering about that. Like, so the Cro-Mags, later on, they describe that their world was tribal, right? Tribal warfare, and then they sort of united against humans. And I'm wondering, like, how did they get to invent sliding, and how did they get to actually control sliding?
Yeah.
This is the thing that I was wondering, like, what? Because it seems like they got the telepathy thing going on, which I guess they took a major evolutionary leap there to develop telepathy. But the whole sliding thing, to me, they didn't seem like people that would just come up with the sliding technology.
You know, not to mention the mantis ships as well.
Right, yeah, and the ships, exactly. So it's just like they had some major leaps or they had some help somewhere.
I think when Mary explains it too, is that once they had discovered sliding, it was world after world of human beings.
Right, right.
Not Cro-Mags.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of united them in a way.
Right.
But they weren't united when sliding was created. You would imagine that their world was not too dissimilar from ours, where they had different nations and all Cro-Mags
right.
are different. But it seems that afterwards, that's when they united as a race to sort of start invading.
Right. See, when I, like, when she said that they were, like, their world was being torn apart by tribal warfare, I just, like, in my mind, when I hear someone talk about, like, tribal warfare, I don't think of, like, a civilized world. I'm thinking more of a primitive civilization where people live in tribes. You know what I mean? Like, we don't live in tribes today. We live in countries, you know, states and, you know, cities, you know, whereas, like, when you say tribal, I don't know, my mind immediately goes to very primitive, like, existences. You know what I'm saying?
And the fact that they look kind of apish.
Exactly.
Kind of, yeah, it builds on that.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, how could these guys come up with, like, this advanced technology, you know? Whereas you got Quinn, you know, who's, you know, modern civilization, comes up with the idea and can't control it. But then you have these ape-like creatures that can not only control it, but they can make spaceships too. So that's something that I was like, So there, yeah, that's, I don't know. That was a little nitpick I had, I suppose.
All aside, I think the Cro-Mags are pretty interesting bad guys to introduce. You know, they're on this world where the Cro-Mags have invaded, and it seems that their sliding equipment is interfering with the timer. And Quinn suddenly knows where the disturbance is coming from. And I was thinking, like, but does the timer have a compass in it or something? Like, I couldn't quite figure out how he knew where the disturbance was coming from. Like,
the best thing that I could figure was that perhaps, like, the way the readout was going crazy, which I don't think they really showed us. However the readout was getting messed up, maybe if he turned a certain way, it got more intense. Maybe the numbers would go a little bit crazier. So maybe he just followed with whichever path the numbers would go crazier on the timer, you know, and that's what led him there.
Yeah, it just seemed a little off to me, that's all.
It did. And yeah, and that's not the only thing that seems a little off. The fact that it took down a Cro-Mag ship as a weapon as well, you know, it's like he aims it and activates it, and then boom, the Mantis ship comes down, which I thought, I didn't know it could do that.
Yeah, and he gives some sort of explanation about, I don't know, I guess conflicting frequencies or something.
Right, yeah, it was something about that. You know, it's science. It's TV science. That's what they do, you know? When you need an explanation, oh, it's the frequencies of the Hermopscrones, you know? Yeah. There you go.
It's the dilithium crystals.
Yeah.
Reverse the polarity.
Exactly. Reverse the polarities. Quick, reverse the polarities. There, we got them now.
But yeah, so it does. It takes down the Cro-Mag ship, and they go to investigate. And while they're there, best exposition extra ever.
Your buddy. You love those guys.
Yeah. I mean, he was terrible as an exposition guy just to come in throw it all out. But, you know, that guy was just chewing it up the whole time.
Yeah, totally. Especially when his daughters come, it's like, oh, look, my two twin daughters. You know, it's like, oh, my God, man. Dial it back a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, Wade notices the wristband. I didn't see any wristband, but she's just like, yeah, that was a mental institution.
We have the guys, they go into the destroyed Mantis ship, and we have Remy outside, and he starts complaining again. And, you know, at first glance, you might think, oh, no, here we go. We're going to get back to the whole, you know, like, Remy's the goof. He's, you know, he's going to whine and cry about it. But no, Wade calls him out, you know. She's like, hey, we've been through all this. Enough of that. You know, let's keep moving forward, which I think is basically my attitude, you know, about that at this point. It's like, all right, we know you're not happy about it, but come on, we've gotten over that part. Your character is growing. So let's continue with that.
Yeah, I thought that was really good because I think it was like a side effect of him being so on edge was that, you know, he's got all he can do is just have a bit of a bitch fest. But then, of course, Wei's just like, shut up. We've been through this. So
exactly.
Yeah, so it was good. Yeah, it was like, oh, my God, you know, we haven't heard Remy complain in a while. Here we go again. But at the same time, it's like, all right, you can see how on edge he is about what's going on here. Nobody's around except mental patients, and the other two have gone off into some alien ship. This is crazy.
No, I understand that. You know, what else is crazy to me is Arturo taking the wrist device off the alien. I was like, he looks at it, he's like, oh, what's this? And he just pulls it off. Like, just why? Like, if I was on an alien ship, I wouldn't be touching much at all. You know, like, I'd be looking at things, but I wouldn't be, like, fiddling with things and removing things from bodies and pushing buttons or anything like that, because you don't know what it's going to do. You have no idea. You know, as soon as he takes it off, of course, the alarm goes off. It's like, oh, hell. So I was like, why? Why would he do that?
I also noticed that when he first picks up the organic metal, and he's so intrigued, and he's calling Quinn over to have a look at it and everything, he's picked it up with a handkerchief, but he's touching it with his other hand. I'm like, if he's going to touch it, just touch it.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, I know that he said later he took it because it's the only proof of Cro-Mag existence, but I don't know. This seemed a little bit out of character just to take it. Just, you know, there's no, if you're a scientist, you know, you don't want to like just grab things and take things out of their environment. You know, you got to study it, right?
Exactly. You know?
So we find out as the sliders slide to the next world that the Cro-Mags are actually sliders as well. They look up and they see a giant red vortex.
And not unlike the one that passed through the astral plane a couple episodes back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Exactly. I don't know if that's related or not, but that would be an interesting take on it as well. So that was kind of neat because up to this point, we only know our sliders. The Quinn and the, you know, Arturo, Remy, and Wade. They're the only ones we know that are sliding. And then suddenly now we've got a whole race of people sliding with a vortex big enough for a ship.
It's interesting because, you know, they're on this French America planet, and they're discussing whether or not they should start warning people about the possibility of invasion. And it kind of wouldn't make sense for them to just start warning every Earth that they go to about Cro-Mag invasion.
Right.
Because who knows how many alternate Earths there are. I mean,
well, exactly.
What are the odds that the Cro-Mags are going to invade a particular Earth?
Well, and that comes up in the messages in time later. We'll see something about that. The other thing, like, about that, yeah, basically, the sliders have just doomed French Earth because now the Cro-Mags know about it and they're there. They can take over that Earth by interfering in the other dimension, by taking that wristwatch or whatever it was. They've basically condemned this whole entire world to Cro-Mag rule now.
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of hard to tell because later they do return to French America and everything seems pretty fine.
That's true.
For a planet that just had, as far as they know, an alien vessel encroach on them.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that more people saw it than just them, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if they do come back or they just, you know, not come back. Are they being picky about which worlds they conquer? Because it seems like that they are hell-bent on conquering the human worlds, wherever they are. Interesting.
And of course, they theorize about who the Cro-Mags are. They got the information that the Cro-Mags are from Earth. They know they're sliders. Right. So they get into this whole thing about different evolutionary paths and the theory that in the early days of humanity, there was an opposing similar species. That sort of our early ancestors wiped out. And I'm assuming that's probably the theory of the Cro-Magnon man.
Yeah, the whole thing. All right, so when he started talking about the theory of the killer ape, he says, you know, the anthropologist Dreyar, you know, said this, and this. I was like, well, that's interesting. So I went to the Google and I looked it up. You know, let's find out about the theory of the killer ape by this guy, Dreyar. I look it up. There is no anthropologist Dreyar at all. Doesn't exist. The theory of the killer ape does exist. And the people who discovered that were two people couple years apart. And their names were Ardrey and Dart, not Dreyar. And if you look at it, you can rearrange the letters of Ardrey to actually spell out Dreyar. And so I looked some more into this. And someone else said I forget what site it was on. It said that Dreyar is actually a combination of Dar and Ardrey put together. So now I don't know why. Like it does. I was trying to figure this out. Like, why would they purposely change the name of the anthropologist who discovered this theory? Because it's easily found. You can easily find this information. If you look up theory of killer ape, it tells you these people's names, Ardrey and Dart. So why make it Dreyar? My thought was maybe they were trying to show, like we said way back in episode one, how Berkeley wasn't in the same place as it is in our world, which, you know, is due to production because they were in Vancouver. Maybe they were trying to indicate that Arturo and company are not from our Earth. Our Earth is not the same because our Earth, it was Ardrey and Dart. In their world, in Quinn and Arturo and Wade and Remy's world, it's Dreyar. So this, and it's not something they ever really follow up on, but still, it's kind of interesting to think that they were thinking that deeply about it, or, you know, someone just made a goof. I don't know. It's one of those.
I don't know which one.
Well, I like the theory that our sliders are from their own Earth. Like, their Earth prime is not the world that we live in.
Right.
And it is kind of cool that they would drop tiny little bits throughout the series that would lead us to believe that if you're paying attention. And, you know, since you and I are sitting down and getting in depth about it, we're starting to notice these tiny little breadcrumbs that they've left. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I was like surprised. I was like, whoa, wait, what's going on here? I'm like, this is awesome. I was like, cool, very cool. It was a neat idea, you know?
Yeah.
And I never thought about it before until I said, well, let's look up the theory of the ape and let me learn a little bit more about it. And so, yeah, there you go.
Very cool. So the Cro-Mags, of course, show up and get the sliders, and they can control their slides, and they've set up an outpost on what they call Earth 113, a planet where advanced life has never taken hold. So it's like they use it like a prison, I guess.
I got, for some reason, like, and it's hard to not think this way, like, because they had the spaceship. I kept thinking that they're going to, like, another, like, galaxy or another planet or something. I kept forgetting that they are just going through a vortex to another Earth. That's all. Because to me, I started to get into the sci-fi mode. Like, they're traveling to a prison planet or something like that. But it's just another dimension. And the reason I mentioned that is because when they talk about the Cro-Mag homeworld, they are talking about just another dimension. It's still Earth, right? The Cro-Mag homeworld is still Earth.
When they're in the ship, they Arturo does mention that the oxygen or the air that within the ship is slightly different. It seemed higher in nitrogen or something like that. So, yeah, it's still Earth, but maybe more acclimatized to what their evolutionary path would need.
I think it was just my thinking, like, because they look so alien, they have the spaceships. Like, in my mind, I kept thinking, why is it taking so long to get from there to Earth 113? And why does it seem like going to the Cro-Mag homeworld would take a long time? But I guess it's just my thinking that it's like an alien spaceship when they are actual just a different version of humans.
We've heard the sliders talk about what happens when too many people go through the vortex. I guess you can imagine if they're going to boost the power so the vortex is big enough to take an entire mantis ship through, then maybe the slide itself just takes a bit longer to get from A to B.
Yeah, that could be, I guess, yeah. So we've also got, we meet Mary, a human who's helping the Cro-Mags. I guess that was, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure how I feel about Mary. I know when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, I don't really like her character in general. I understand why she's there to be the interpreter and everything. But I don't know, did we need Mary?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, it made the Cro-Mags more mysterious because, you know, she's talking. They're setting up that they use telepathy, I guess. There's that one Cro-Mag who does that creepy backwards walk through.
Oh, yeah, I know, like, what you're talking about.
All that cabling or something. I was like, yep. What the hell is he doing?
That was creepy. I remember that. I'm like, oh, my.
Yeah. And she says,
backing off.
Yeah, and she says that the Cro-Mags refuse to learn human tongue. But, you know, at the end of the episode, they're speaking in English.
They are.
It could be that thing, you know, where everyone, they're speaking English, but that's just for the audience benefit.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Like, I was thought maybe we're sort of hearing what she's hearing in her head. You know, like, that's, even though his lips are moving. But still, yeah, that's something I caught the very first time I watched it back in the, you know, 96. Is like, I thought they didn't know how to speak English, you know, or they didn't want to speak English or whatever.
Well, at the same time, I don't think it would be hard for them to learn English. They can read people's minds.
Well, exactly. It's not difficult.
So it should be quite easy for them to pick it up.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of, like, from the beginning, you kind of knew that Mary was not, like, when she started acting nice to Quinn in the garden, I was like, I don't believe this at all. You know, like, this is what you do, you know, you try to get the hero to feel bad or, you know, attached to a female character and get information that way.
Yeah.
So I wasn't buying that she was being honest there.
Well, it does seem that this garden, like a botanical garden thing that they let her go to for solitude is actually a real thing, because later they reward her with that.
Right.
But in the context of the show, yeah, she says that, but indeed they are setting up the sliders.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have believed. I wouldn't have, like, if I was Quinn, I wouldn't have believed that we weren't being watched while we were in there. You know, no matter what, I'd be like, no, they're watching. Of course they're watching.
And, well, you know, Quinn doesn't get too much on the master manipulation, really. It's more Arturo and Remy that learn more about that, because Remy meets his father. Arturo at some point thinks he is talking to Remy when he's not.
Right.
So those two kind of get the manipulation side of it. Wade gets the interrogation side of it.
Yeah, right? She does. And, like, I gotta say, like, we didn't get to see much of Arturo's, like, actual interrogation, you know, so we're not sure exactly, besides, you know, talking to a fake, you know, an unreal Remy. But Remy's bit with his dad was really good. Like, that was a great moment for you know, his character and everything. Like, it's really well done. Like, I was like, wow, this is intense. This is great. The way he acted it, you know, very well done.
Yeah. They leave it ambiguous again.
Yeah.
In they do, that, you know. Is he a real person, albeit maybe just another version of his father from another.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking.
Or was he a figment that the Cro-Mags placed in his head? I would believe that he is actually a real person because he screws up. About his sister.
Exactly. So he's just reading his mind, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, it would lead us to believe that he was just, he's Remy's dad, but a different us.
Yeah, and Wade herself, she was really strong during that interrogation, standing up, you know, to the Cro-Mags. And then at the end, which I'd never noticed before, as they are trying to escape, they hit a dead end and they turn around to run, and a Cro-Mag shows up, and just Wade goes and tackles her. Tackles the Cro-Mag. Like, she just goes right in there. Of course, you know, she's not strong enough, and Arturo comes up and, you know, gives him a good punch. But still, I was like, well, that's, you know, that's good. They're trying to show her as not just, like, you know, the female of the group, that she's going to actually contribute a lot. So I thought it was a good episode for both Wade and Remy, for their characters.
The other thing, too, which is a bit of a squee moment, is that there's this other person being held in a cell. Across from the sliders. Well, mostly Arturo. And he gives us all this info about how Cro-Mags eat human eyes and so on. And as they're escaping, I guess they figure that he is a real person, because Arturo started to think that maybe he wasn't real. It's just the Cro-Mags mucking around. And it's Conrad Benish Jr.
Now, they don't ever actually call him Conrad Benish Jr. And there's a reason for this, okay? The reason we haven't seen Conrad in any of the episodes since the very beginning is because Fox didn't want him in there. They didn't want that guy, because the other show that was on at the time, that VR5, I think it's the one we talked about, the virtual reality, the female scientist and all that, way back when, in that show, there was a character that was very similar to Benish, you know, a long-haired, hippie-ish type character. And they didn't want to have two shows with that same type of character on. So they would not let them use Conrad Benish, the character, at all. They said, no, don't put him in there. The only way they got around it was they hired, you know, I think his name is Jason Gaffney, who plays Conrad Benish. They hired him, but they did not say what his character's name was in the script or whatever. So Fox couldn't say, oh, don't use that character. That's how they got around it.
Sneakily dropping those little Easter eggs in.
Exactly.
But it turns out that the Cro-Mags just led them to believe that they had escaped. They had not. They let them go. An interesting turn of events. He says that they are tracking them.
Now, back in the day, when you first watched it, who did you think had the tracker?
I was thinking Wade. Just because they had sort of interrogated her.
See, when I didn't have any thoughts to it this episode, but in a later episode, because see, again, when I was watching these shows, I really did not think about an overarching storyline. I still hadn't made that transition to that type of TV. So I didn't really think much about it. But then there's a later episode where Arturo has some kind of sickness and he goes to see a doctor and gets a scan. You remember that episode?
Yeah.
When I saw that episode, I thought, oh, I bet he's the one with the tracker, and the tracker is causing some sickness in him. That's what I thought originally.
Right. Kind of like an X-Files kind of thing with Scully.
Exactly. Exactly.
Interesting hypothesis there.
What can I say? I am the father of interdimensional travel, so. Anyway, so now here's something. There's probably an explanation for this, I'm sure. They're on this outpost Earth, and as they're escaping, Quinn sees the sliding equipment, the Cro-Mag sliding equipment, and he destroys it. You know, he messes up with the wires and switches the... He reverses the polarities, I think. He switches the two wires.
He kind of does. Look at that.
I went and reversed the polarities, guys. Everything's fine. And then it blows up, and so now they can't slide. But immediately, right after that, Mary opens a vortex for him, a Cro-Mag vortex, a red vortex, so they can get back to the previous dimension. So did they have like a backup system, I guess? Or, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that is a little off, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite make sense.
No. See, and again, this goes back to me like not really thinking about them as being on an outpost Earth. I thought they were still on the ship, you know, like in my mind, they were on a spaceship still. And maybe it was just the sliding machine for this spaceship. So maybe they have other ships with the sliding machine as well. But then I thought, well, no, because they are on an outpost. They're in a prison, you know, on land. So how did they open the vortex? It's mystery.
Yeah, and Quinn does say that he destroyed it so they can't follow them now. But
right.
Well, yeah, why couldn't they just open the vortex again the same way exactly. they just did?
Yeah. Now, my other question is, why, like, I don't understand again, why do they need to be on the previous Earth? Because they've never activated their timer. They can use another person's vortex to go to another Earth and then just slide from there. Why did they have to be back on French Earth in order to slide again?
Again, I think they just throw out some flippant explanation about, I guess we know that the timer counts down to, mm-hmm. you know, get that prime moment to slide out. Maybe the timer's always tuned to the world that you slide into for some reason. Yeah,
maybe, I don't know.
Because if you went to, well, if you went
we'll
to,
another,
yeah, if you went to another Earth, then I guess the timer would have to reset itself to try and find another time to open a vortex. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that does kind of make sense there because, yeah, if they – because whatever dimension they go to, that it's it says that in this dimension, when this counts down to zero, this is going to be the prime time to go from this dimension to this other dimension. So that makes sense. If they go to another dimension through someone else's vortex, it would have to, like, reset itself somehow, you know? Otherwise, I guess maybe if they slid from that Earth 113, they run the risk of the slider burning out. That's
maybe.
That makes sense. That makes more sense. That makes it a little bit easier to swallow.
And now, another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arturo.
Very shortly, an army of killer apes will be descending in your Vichyssoise.
This has been another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arturo.
Getting into the second episode today, the episode is Post-Traumatic Slide Disorder, written by Nan Hagen and directed by Adam Nimoy. This was originally aired May 3rd of 1996.
Now, is Nimoy related to, you know, the Nimoy?
You know, I thought about it. I meant to look it up. And I never...
Well, I'm going to do the synopsis. You let us know after the synopsis.
Okay.
You should have seen this guy. A mum world, he introduced a strain of antibiotics and single-handedly stopped the plague.
What about that world where he brought down the asteroid with the A-bomb?
Oh!
Huh?
The atom bomb?
All I did was jury-rig the detonator. The fissionable material was already there.
Oh, my. That's remarkable.
Nothing really.
How'd they take it?
Well, everybody was basically in a state of shock. My sister just screamed, oh, my God, for 10 minutes.
So, guys, how about a toast, huh?
Professor, go ahead.
No. You're the man of the house.
Well, seems to me there's only one thing to say. To friendship.
To friendship.
And to home.
And to home.
We open the episode with Remy baring his soul to a psychologist about a recent slide that has him on edge. Upon first glance, everything about the world indicates that the sliders have reached home. Every test they attempt, most notably the squeaky gate test, turns out positive that yes, this is indeed home. The sliders celebrate and contact their loved ones. Arturo cautions the group against revealing sliding just yet because they don't have the full mechanics worked out, like how to control it, for example. Until he and Quinn find that final bit of work, the group is to keep quiet for now. They agree, but are surprised when Arturo appears on TV claiming to have invented sliding. Very quickly, Remy and Wade decide to cash in on this announcement, Remy gaining a musical resurgence and Wade gaining a book and movie deal based on her diaries. Quinn, who refuses to believe Arturo would actually do something like this, begins to see small signs that they aren't actually home. The wrong team being in the Super Bowl, a missing asterisk on an old baseball card, an old yearbook photo that differs from what he remembers, all of which are seen by Remy and Wade as insignificant and not true proof,
possibly being even his faulty memory. Meanwhile, Quinn finds his house robbed of the timer, but gets no sympathy from Wade, who is happy to be in a near-perfect replica of her home dimension. He then crashes Arturo's press conference to tell him his findings, but again, he finds no support. Wade and Remy discover the timer on display during Arturo's museum opening and alert Quinn. Wade soon sees the Azure Gate Bridge as opposed to the Golden Gate Bridge and realizes that Quinn was right. They confront Arturo and discover that he has known it wasn't their world all along. Wade and Quinn attempt to retrieve the timer only to discover it was a replica and find themselves captured and jailed. Remy bails them out and is now on board with them after he finds out that the Tops share writing credit on his songs on this world. The three break into Arturo's home only to discover the professor tied up in the basement, having been trapped there by his double since they slid into this world. Slimy Professor shows up and Arturo Prime cold cocks him. The timer is retrieved and goodbyes are said to the friends and families of the Sliders. They activate the vortex, but Slimy Arturo shows up and a fight ensues. In the end, the group slides with one Arturo left behind, leaving us wondering which Arturo slid, Slime or Prime.
I must have heard him say he was doing Gate Bridge a dozen times over the radio. It just never registered.
Sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. It's gonna be okay.
How?
We're gonna get the timer, we're gonna slide out of here, and we're gonna get home, I promise.
My friends, my family, my career. Nothing!
Hey, come on. It's gonna be okay. Just remember, our real families are still looking for us. We gotta be strong, Wade, for their sake as well as our own.
I'm sorry I didn't believe you. I thought you were losing it.
Don't worry about it. Come on, we got work to do.
Alright, so getting into a bit of trivia, which I have been feverishly looking up while Tom took care of the synopsis there. Adam Nimoy is indeed the son of Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah, looking at his IMDb, he actually got his start by directing two episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation in 92 and again in 93. And since then, he's gone on to a bunch of TV shows, including Babylon 5, of course, Sliders, Nash Bridges, Ally McBeal.
Wow.
A very vast array. Early Edition. Do you remember that show?
I remember that, yeah.
About the guy who got the newspaper day early? Mm-hmm.
That's right. I never watched it, but I remember seeing the ads for it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Hercules.
I watched Hercules, yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's neat. Good old Adam Nimoy. Look at that. For this episode, what we have is Arturo outright lies about Quinn's football game memory. When Quinn says, you know, these weren't the teams that were in the Super Bowl, Arturo actually says, no, yes, they were. You know, like he actually argues with Quinn saying, no, it happened that way. So just a little deleted scene there. The statue of Arturo that we saw was supposed to be a lot bigger, you know, a lot taller. And behind it, there were going to be three smaller statues of the other Sliders, you know, just, you know, to dig a little bit more at how insignificant, you know, that they are, because he's the guy, he's the father, he's the one who created this.
Rub a little salt and lemon into
those
worms.
Exactly. Now, there was going to be, after Quinn's timer got stolen, he was going to reference how he thought maybe the Cro-Mags took it. But obviously, you know, this aired, I think this aired before Invasion, right? So they didn't, they couldn't do that because of the way Fox, you know, would change up the program. There was another scene that showed how Quinn and Wade actually got into the museum because they have guards, you know. How do these two guys get into a locked and alarmed museum? Basically, they used a pocket fisherman from Quinn's double's dad. And they used it to set off the museum alarms from, like, I don't know, from a high vantage point. Like, they would toss that in with the fishing line, and it would set off the silent alarm, or not silent alarms, but the infrared alarms. And they kept doing that multiple times, but then they would reel up, you know, the fishing line, and the guards would never find it. So they thought that the alarm system was just broken, so they shut off that alarm system, and that enables them to get in to where the timer actually is. It was a neat thing to do, but it definitely, you know, for time, you can see why they had to cut that. And then finally, the very last line that Arturo says, you know, after everyone slides, the, oh my God, that part there, that wasn't in the original script. That was just added in there as they were shooting.
I think it's an interesting line because it can be taken many different ways.
Yeah, and it has. Since that episode aired, many people have decided, well, does it mean this or does it mean that? So, and that's going to come up also, I think, in the Messages in Time.
Looking for this? And you really think that you could pull off this counterfeit? You scoundrel. This man is a thief, a kidnapper, and a liar. Pay no attention to anything he says.
Uh-oh.
Who's who, Q-Ball?
Can't you see that aside from outward appearances, this charlatan is nothing like me? He's a self-aggrandizing, malcontented egomaniac who thinks that the sun rises and sets for him.
He sounds like a Turo.
But how the hell was I the man chained up?
Now listen to me, this is crucial. I managed to escape early today, and in the process chained down the Arturo of this world, whom you unfortunately have mistaken for me. Think. Don't you find it odd that he knew exactly where to look for the timer?
Because I was sitting over there when you hit it here!
The world where I built the atom bomb. The world where I met my late wife. Now who else would know that but me?
Anyone who'd read Miss Wells' serialized diary, you blistering idiot! It is a disgrace, sir, to think that we share a common genetic structure.
Alright, so getting into our discussion of post-traumatic slide disorder. Now, we pick it up with Remy at a therapist. And, you know, I think this is an interesting way to structure the episode. You know, rather than just following the sliders on their adventure, it's told in flashback as Remy recounts what's going on with him. And, you know, it sort of adds an extra element to his character. We were just talking about the last episode where he started complaining again. You know, he was so on edge. And you can understand how all this crap he's going through is really starting to weigh on him. So he's sort of trying to get it all out. The story that he's going to tell sort of compounds the issue.
Yeah, it was a neat way to present the episode, like the rapper, you know? Like, it was a neat way to do it. I liked it.
Because, you know, he's going to tell the story about how they arrived home. Again, that sort of even brings up this air of mystery. Are they actually home, or have they continued to slide?
That was a great idea. It was very, very well done. I like that.
So, yeah. So, our sliders believe they're home. Everything seems to be falling into place. I still have to call out, though, that we have Bizarro, Quinn's mum.
Yeah.
They've brought that other actress back again. And they don't really give her a lot to do.
No.
Because they're all, you know, they're all in the house and they're going to have a toast. They're going to have some, you know, some champagne and have a toast. Mm-hmm. And it just seems that everything she does is just reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
She maybe says something, but it's of no consequence. It's exactly. Just everything she was doing, I'm just like, that's just not right.
Yeah, so, she might as well not be there, you know? Might as well not even be there. Well, you know, I don't know why. Like, I'd have to... I know there's a section on Dimension of Continuity that talks a little bit about recurring characters, and I think she's mentioned there, but I don't know why. Like, I didn't read it, so I'm not quite sure. I'll have to look into it and see why they decided to not have the original actress back. Was she doing another project or what? But, yeah, it's just odd.
Of course, the professor suggests that they should keep their experiences to themselves, which is not going to work out very well for him because of course, what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, but that makes sense because, you know, they can't control it yet. And, like, they're not going to want to just, you know, put it out there and say, hey, we discovered other dimensions, but don't go because we can't really control it yet. So we don't really have any proof. So, yeah, it makes sense that he would say that, though.
You know, it's a little off that that plays directly into the alternate Arturo's plan. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got to come up with explanations for where they've been for 18 months. And I love that the professor, again, just blatantly insults Remy's career.
Yeah, it was a good line. Definitely a quotable moment there.
Yeah, it was a fair few episodes back when he said,
we know we can't be home because you're famous here.
Yeah, you're popular here, so we can't be home. So here he says, the state of your career when we left, you know, I don't think anybody will worry too much about what you've been up to. So, and I was like, oh man, that is just so mean. Like, why doesn't Remy turn around and just like sock him one right in the face?
Yeah, really. Well, we do get in this episode here, we get a brief Quaid moment where they kiss. And it seems very heartfelt. You know, again, we know it's not going anywhere, but still it was a nice moment there for both of them, you know, like, we made it home. Thank you for everything that you know, because of you, we've seen all these wonderful things, and they're just sweet and happy at that moment.
The way that they keep them all in the scene as well at Quinn's house is that they just have Wade call up her family on the phone. And I was a bit like, that's a bit mean. Like, you've been gone for 18 months and you just call them up out of the blue. I mean, you can't live too far away. Exactly. Why don't you just go home?
Mm-hmm. Go home and see them, you know, give them a hug and everything. I mean, yeah, been gone for, you know, more than a year. Yeah. That would make sense.
You know, they've at least told their families about what's going on. It's hard to not tell Quinn's mother, but at least Wade comes clean. You know, she doesn't try to come up with anything when it comes to her family.
Right.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, Arturo's like, well, I'll just tell people I was on sabbatical. And Remy, you tell people that you were touring Asia.
Yeah. I don't know. That's not too believable to me. You know, touring Asia, you know, or just backpacking. They didn't think, you know, we're not gonna call our parents and let them know. We're gonna let them worry for a year and a half. You know, that we're just missing. You know, like it's like, why did you tell me, son? My God.
You know, it turns out that Arturo decides he's gonna steal Quinn's idea.
When I first saw it, I was like, what? Oh my God! I can't believe they're doing this. I was like, this, and like, it was exciting because that's a neat way to take it. That the good guy that you've been following for, you know, a season and a half is gonna be the bad guy now. You know, that's cool. I like that idea.
Yeah, it's a good twist. And when do you think the switch was made?
I think it happened after, because when he goes back to the school and the secretary, I guess it was, didn't recognize him. It had to be after that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because he kind of shows up and, you know, he tells her that he was on sabbatical and that everything's going to change. And I think it's at that point that the secretary decides that she's going to go and say something. Because she seemed confused that he was there. So
yeah, she was very confused.
I think she knew that Arturo was supposed to be at home, sort of keeping away from people, trying his best to recreate sliding. So she was the one who alerted him to what was going on.
The thing that kind of bothered me, though, is that Quinn didn't really care much that the professor was taking credit for. I know Quinn didn't care about the popularity, you know, and the fame that went with it or anything, but it just seemed odd that he wouldn't be more like trying to get to the professor sooner to say, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I thought we were going to do this instead. You know, it just seemed a little out of character for the hero.
Well, at the same time, they kind of throw in this whole thing about how Quinn has been perceptive enough to know that they're not harm.
Right, right.
And it's not working well for him because it's little things about, you know, who won a football game, a kid who may have had braces. So everybody's like, leave us alone. Like, this is ridiculous.
Because it could be faulty memory. Like, yeah. There's this guy that I know, all right, that, you know, I do online concerts and he does online concerts as well. And for, you know, 2 years, I've been, you know, talking with him every once in a while when we're online at the same time. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember we went to school, you know, and you sat behind me and we da 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 da, all this stuff, right? But then, like, about a month ago, this other guy friended me on Facebook. And I'm like, wait a second. I think that's the guy that sat behind me the whole time in high school. And who the heck was this other guy? Was he the guy or was it this guy? So, like, faulty memory. It's possible, you know?
Yeah. And everybody's too busy cashing in on their fame that they've got. Because the secret's out. Arturo's out there saying that he invented it. So Remy, he's getting a re-release of Cry Like a Man.
Yeah.
Wade's serializing her diary, which was... She mentioned that back on, was it the lottery?
Yeah.
That she was keeping a diary. And they kind of dropped it and they bring it back here.
Right.
That she had this diary. So she's serializing that. She's getting all this money. She even mentions like $1 million.
Yeah, they were both really into this, into the whole thing. And like, I guess it's easy to get caught up in that.
Yeah. So, you know, when Wade and Remy are saying like, you know, why aren't you more annoyed that the professor is stealing your idea? I guess he's more in the mindset of it doesn't matter because we're not harmed.
I'm thinking like, I don't know, this shows a whole, like if I was Quinn and I saw this happening, I'd be like, man, the professor's kind of a dick. You know, like I had no idea. I thought he really cared about us. I thought he was our friend. But like this changes things a little bit for me as the hero, you know, as Quinn. I'd be like, man, what happened to him? Why would he do this? But yeah, it makes sense with all the little things he's noticing that they're like, yeah, come on, man. We're home. We're basically home. You just forgot.
But of course, we get to a big detail in that the Golden Gate Bridge is not the Golden Gate Bridge. It's blue and it's called the Azure Gate Bridge.
Yes, exactly. And this part, when Wade like discovers that, I tell you, she definitely, I mean, you got to give her props. Like she was killing it on this scene, you know, like
she sold it so well.
Her breakdown was like, oh, and right there, it just shows you that, you know, like she is a good actress. For people who are like down on Wade, there were a couple of people who were down on Wade's acting in the very beginning, but right there, it's you know, it shows what she can do.
And the other thing I noticed too, because you look at this in retrospect, knowing that Arturo is an Arturo. After Wade has her mini breakdown, her and Quinn need to go and get the others. They go and see Arturo, and they give him a postcard to say, "Look, this isn't right. This isn't the Golden Gate Bridge."
Right.
And when you watch the scene, he looks at it and he goes, it's a picture postcard of the Azure Gate Bridge. He never actually calls out that that is something that is wrong.
Right.
It's not until they say, so you knew this whole time that we weren't home, that he starts going, oh, yes, yes, almost immediately, but blah, 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 blah. And that is really neat to sort of see his reaction through that spectrum. Of knowing that he's not there, Arturo.
It was really well done. I like, just in general, I really like this episode. And then we also get a great little gift in the form of Maurice Fish. And I tell you, he didn't say much, but you look at him and he was still entertaining. You know, like his facial expressions and everything as he was just standing there, you know. It was really cool to see him again.
Yeah, I actually had to pause it to make sure it was him because when we'd seen him before, you know, he was playing the character as in a bit, you know, deluded and creepy, and he sort of slashed a bit. Here, he's just a singer, you know.
Right. So he's still got standing, the crazy eyes, though.
Yeah, he was standing tall, and, you know, he's more confident about himself. It's definitely him.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, the guy who actually was doing more of the talking, that was the Reverend from Last Days.
Right, it was too.
Yeah, and they never mentioned that back in Last Days that maybe he was a spinning top, but on this world he was. So it would make sense if he was a spinning top on that world as well, but it's, you know, they didn't know back then, I'm sure, that they were going to cast the same actor.
Yeah. You know? But so, it's interesting to think of it, going back that maybe Remy knew who that reverend was.
There's also, speaking of different actors, in the future episodes, we will eventually see Wade's dad. We'll be introduced to him. But the dad they used in this episode had a different actor, someone totally different. And, I mean, again, just kind of like Mallory's mom in this one, it was just kind of like he's had like one line, like, take care, sweetie, or something like that.
Yeah, you can see for all of 2 seconds.
Exactly.
But, it turns out that Arturo was double-crossed by himself. You know, that's an interesting turn of events. It's that the world is, like, so precise, except for the big difference of the Azure Gate Bridge. Events played out the same, except Arturo didn't go with them.
Right, exactly. That was neat. I like that. That's all history right there. I like that. The one thing I didn't like was when, you know, Slime Arturo decides to say, oh, well, I escaped earlier and I tied him down here and was coming to get you to show you, you know. It's such a lame excuse. Like, it's obviously, I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all, you know. I mean, come on.
It's hard to determine, really, who was who. He could have maybe got his evil self tied up down there, but he may not have because it is kind of lame, but... Right. Oh, I don't know.
And like the thing was, like, I was watching it again, and as I was watching it, I was like, oh, look at the prime, who I think the prime who was tied up, his collar is open and the tie is askew. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this because when they get into the fight later, we'll be able to see, you know. But no, when they get to the fight, he straightened his collar and his coat is wrapped around it. So you can't even use that as a reference to see who was who at that point.
Yeah, they both, for inexplicable reasons, are wearing the same thing.
Yeah, because, you know, he has two copies of the exact same, you know, suit and tie in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course it just gives us the debate. Did evil Arturo go with them, or do they have their Arturo?
Right.
I like to think that they have their Arturo.
I like to think that too. Now there is some stuff coming up in the messages from time, but I'm going to give this to you now, okay? Over on earthprime.com, they have an article, basically. It was an interview with Tracy Torme, and this, what they wanted to do, Tracy Torme says, quote, for what it's worth, I believe the wrong Arturo slid, and he was the one with the implant. From the creator's mouth himself. That's what he says. Here's how he was going to do it. Because Invasion was supposed to be the season finale. He was going to have Slime Professor with the Sliders go on some adventures. And the Prime Professor would be left on Azure Gate World. Eventually, since that professor had the implant, the Cro-Mags would show up there. And he would be able to use that. You know, somehow they would work it so that he would be able to use the technology to catch up to where Slime Arturo is with our Sliders. And so it would have happened over a couple different episodes. Of course, that's not how things went, but that was his original idea. As the behind the scenes goes on with Sliders, you know, Tracy was getting, you know, irritated with Fox. Fox was getting irritated with Tracy, and eventually, you know, he wasn't able to do the things that he wanted to do, and it went on for too long. He didn't want to have the wrong professor with the group forever, you know, maybe two or three episodes. You know, just so it would be like a big reveal. You're like, oh my God, this isn't the right professor. You know, and then we would get the right professor back again. But he couldn't do it because he couldn't show the episodes in the order he wanted to do. Fox wouldn't work with him on it. So that's what happened there. He says, originally, it was supposed to be the wrong professor.
So that was originally, but as it was written and the story unfolds, I guess it's better to just resign ourselves to the fact that, yeah, they have the right professor.
Right. I mean, if you're going to do like fan fiction, you know, if you're going to continue the story yourself, then maybe you want to go with something like that. You know, that way the professor can still be a part of the show, you know.
Well, at the same time, I mean, spoiler alert for the future, if you haven't watched it, but Arturo is going to die in the next season.
What?
So. What?
Wait. You could have told me. I could have muted you for just, you know, 10 seconds. He's going to die? Forget it. Next thing you're going to tell me, Ray, that Wade's going to be written out of the show, too. And that's just too much for me. Don't, you know. As long as we keep Quinn, I'm going to be fine. All right? So just, all right? Don't, just let's move on. Let's move on. I don't even want to. Don't even want to talk about it.
But, you know, I'm just saying that if it is the wrong Arturo, then our Arturo isn't dead.
Right, exactly.
He's just trapped on a zero-gate bridge wall.
Right, exactly. And then, you know what, just on a final note, I got to say, the secretary that works for the psychiatrist, what the hell is up with her hair? Did you see that? Like, it's like she was in Something About Mary and got stuff in her hair and stick it. It's like crazy how high that hair is. It's like, I don't know about that world.
Maybe she's just a fan of Flock of Seagulls or something.
There you go. Maybe. That could be. Nice.
It's like the Bill and Ted theory, except like Flock of Seagulls are like a gigantic band that everyone loves.
Yep. I like it.
But yeah, that was a cool ending to the show. You know, we get back to Remy with the psychiatrist and they slide out and send the psychiatrist into a psychotic state because
exactly.
That's what you get for doubting Remy's story. You ignorant fool. Yeah, cool ending, cool episode. I really liked it.
So that's the whole story, Doc. Soup to nuts. Fame and fortune snatched from our clutches. Condemned to wander the interdimensional vortex like nomads. Not to mention more ugly memories of mutinous tops, on top of which
We've got an Arturo, and we don't even know which one he is.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, we need to see Rembrandt Brown.
He's in a session with the doctor.
You don't understand. This is an emergency.
Well, I'm sorry you can't interrupt the session.
I don't have time to argue with you.
Hey, you Rembrandt. Can't go in there.
Rembrandt!
Rembrandt!
Where's his family?
Excuse me, you can't just barge in.
Sorry to interrupt, Dr. Rembrandt. We're going to miss the slide.
Apologies, guys. I kind of lost track of time. Always looking after me, huh, cue ball?
That's what it's all about.
Cue ball.
3, 2, 1.
Sorry about all this, Doc. Huh? Rembrandt, come on!
All right, so shall we get into some messages in time?
All right, so we'll start with messages from the post-traumatic episode. People were basically thinking the same thing as yourself. You know, since they didn't really follow up on the whole Arturo thing, they're basically saying, you know what, the right Arturo slid. You know, the wrong one is stuck back on his real home world. So it's fine. There were some, though, that said, well, I don't know, Arturo's acting a little bit different, so I think he's the wrong Arturo. I mean, it's a back and forth thing. You know, you could go either way, really. Someone said that it's one idea that would have been good for like a final like season finale was that the good Arturo does get stuck and has to develop sliding, you know, again on his own. And then he could have, you know, tested it more and then eventually found the real Earth Prime that he was from. And then he said that once Arturo meets up with the sliders again, it would be great to have a throwaway line to Quinn, something like, by the way, Mr. Mallory, your mother fixed the gate, you know, like just a little dig saying, we were home, you idiot, you know. So I thought that's a good, that would have been a great thing to see, but, you know, obviously. They were saying that they had heard rumors that, you know, the actor, John Rhys-Davies, was not happy with the way Arturo was being developed. And they were thinking, well, you know what, this turn here, you know, making him be an evil Arturo, maybe this is a way of the writers trying to keep him happy so that he wants to stay on the show. You know, making him be evil Arturo gives him new dimensions to play for the character, and it might be a good way to keep him satisfied and happy and staying on the show. That's what they were thinking.
Interesting.
There was also this, and how credible this could be, but one person posted it. Hey, I know a guy who knows a guy that talked to Sabrina Lloyd who talked to a writer and said the right Arturo slid. So yeah, you guys are all wrong. You know, I'm like, okay, that's credible. Yeah, a guy who knows a guy who talked to Sabrina, who talked to a writer. Yeah, shut up. Yeah. All right.
It's the Ferris Bueller syndrome there.
Exactly. And then finally for this episode, people were really freaking out about the 18-month timeline because they said in this episode, we've been sliding for 18 months. And so they were getting really like, well, wait, that means, wait, it debuted in this month and this year, but then that can't be because in this episode they said this and this and this, and it doesn't go with that and that. And so how does 18-month work? They were really going off on that. And it was not real, like, interesting. It was just kind of like the typical geek nerd talk. And it's fun sometimes, and then other times it's like, okay, they just said 18 months. It's not a big deal. Just let it go, you know, move on. So, yeah, people were really freaking out about that. There was a lot of posts about the 18-month timeline.
Yeah, get over it. That's what they said.
Exactly. So get over it. So now let's go to messages in time for Invasion. People were complaining about the organic metal line. They're saying that organic metal can't exist. They said what they should have done is just reworded it to something like, you know, this alloy, it's not quite metal, but it's not like anything else, and it looks like there's veins in it or arteries. This could have been part of a living being. They said that saying it was organic metal was like scientifically dumb. Like it was just wrong. It was as bad as like breaking the physics in the previous episode we were talking about. So that was a big discussion going on. As we mentioned earlier, we don't think that the Cro-Mags were going to every Earth that the sliders were going to, like French Earth or French USA or whatever it was. People were wondering, boy, what if the Cro-Mags are going to all the Earths now that the sliders go to because they're tracking them? That makes this a very dark show all of a sudden. They thought, what if, you know, the sliders are on a world, you know, they do what they do and interfere and they make things better and then they slide out. But then they could show like a teaser at the very end, like a little tag, where as they slide out, another vortex opens in the sky and a manta ship comes through. It makes it a very darker show because no matter what good they do, the Cro-Mags are coming through and they're going to mess it all up after. They had also said that maybe the Cro-Mags will meet Smarter Quinn in one of these episodes since they're going to all these different places. And I forget where it was, but one of these posts had theorized that maybe the Smarter Quinn was the one who gave Cro-Mags sliding.
Ah, look at them go.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa, okay.
Again, spoiler alert for the future, jeez.
Right. So I was like, well, that's, yeah. You know, they predicted the whole thing about Arturo, you know, a couple episodes back. So they're pretty smart, those 1996ers, you know? They said the Cro-Mags should have put the tracker in the timer instead of one of the humans, because they need the timer to access the world. So that would have been the more logical place to have put the timer instead of a human who might die.
No matter where they go, they're going to have the timer with them.
Most people did like Invasion a lot. I liked Invasion. You know, I thought it was a good, definitely a good episode. I like it a lot better than the future Cro-Mag episodes that come up, just because things go a little bit different with those. We'll get to those. But I like the idea of the Cro-Mags. But one person does agree with me. His name was Dennis. So Dennis, wherever you are in 2015, I don't know. But in 1996, you agreed that the better villain is the slide itself, the world that they land on. Rather than having a tangible villain, you know, the idea of the world being your enemy is what he found a lot better. You know, the different dimensions is what makes it more interesting to him. And I got to agree with him. I like that better.
Yeah, it's not like we're going to get like Cro-Mag overload or something like that throughout the episodes. But you're right. Yeah, the world and having to deal with that world is definitely what the show needs to go with.
And then just one final note that I wasn't quite sure where to put it in. I probably should have put it in the discussion, but Sliders did win an Emmy for Invasion because of the sound effects that they used. They won an Emmy for.
Very nice.
All right, so now we got messages from Earth Prime, and we meant to address this in another episode, but we're going to do it right here. On the sliders.tv forums, you should head over there if you haven't already and sign up and participate. Russian Cabby Lottery fan had asked about how we record these episodes, how it sounds like, you know, I'm sitting right next to Corey. And the answer is that I'm just independently wealthy and I actually fly down to Australia every week. It's, you know, I don't mind it. I like flying. You know, the food, it really isn't so bad in first class. So I just go down, we hang out on his big purple couch there, and we do the episode. You know, in fact, after we get done here, I got to, you know, catch the plane back to Arizona because, you know, I've got a date tomorrow. So yeah, it's, you know, that's how we do it. Isn't that right, Corey?
Yeah. We'll shift the purple couch over to the opera house. Good acoustics in there.
Yeah, I love this. I mean, this is great. I love the opera house. I've never been in there until we started doing this podcast. So I'm thankful for this podcast for that. Okay. Basically, I put what I do. My setup is over on the sliders.tv forum. So if you look for that thread about the Rewatch podcast there, you could see what my setup is. And I tell you about that, but I'll let Corey describe what he does, his part in this.
Yeah. Well, basically we're using Skype to sort of sync our conversations, but the two of us just independently record our side of the conversation into GarageBand, which is just a free app on Mac. And afterwards, I just sync it up and, hey, it sounds like we're in the same room together.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Corey is definitely the workhorse of this show. I just sort of show up and talk and that's about it. So it's all him.
Not that hard, but, you know, audio quality is, something we try to pride ourselves on. So
definitely.
Thank you for calling that out, Russian Cabby Lottery fan. Okay, so next week's episode, we actually have a very special episode.
I was hoping you would do that. It's a very special episode of Rewatch Podcast.
Because we will be discussing three episodes to round out season two.
Three episodes. That's one for each nostril and one for your mouth. I don't know.
That's a weird thing to say.
You know, like I say, you know, when I talk to my kids at school, you know, like we talk about different things. And if the number two ever comes up, I'm like, yeah, there's two of them, one for each nostril. So I started doing it. I'm like, well, no, there's three. So I got to come up with something else. So there you go. Don't ask. Moving on.
But those three episodes we are discussing in Dino Veritas, Greatfellas, and then the season finale, or what is supposed to be the season finale, The Young and the Relentless.
I remember liking that episode a lot just because Wade had long hair, and I'm a fan of long hair.
Long-haired Wade.
All right. That's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, our friends at Slider Slide Side. Of course, we've got earthprime.com and the active forum over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. 5-star reviews preferable, but only if we deserve it. I think we do.
You know, let's take a page from the Sliders cast, all right? What they said was, you know what? You could say whatever you want about the episode, but just rate us 5 stars, you know? That way we still get up in the search results. So even if you hate us, go ahead and say whatever you want in the actual text, but then still give us 5 stars, you know? At least if you hate us, we're, you know, that's worth 5 stars, I think, because we're making you hate something. So that, yeah, do it. Do it.
All right. Well, time to get out of here. So I'll just say until next time, may your punishment be relative.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast. Sliders.